numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in. Second hour of a numbers game presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Gil today. Keep a track of everything going on at the Open Championships. Looks like Colin Morikawa is going to drop one. What was that, like a 4 or 5 foot putt for a bogey, I think, is coming up for Colin Morikawa. I don't know if you saw that. Was I wrong?
No, I was just wondering. What are you looking at right now?
Rory McIlroy.
Okay. I was like, is your TV that far behind? But okay. Yeah. Yes. But Morikawa bogey putt upcoming. Great play out of the trap by Rory.
Look at the red. By the way, this one, fairway on the tee shot. So
there you go.
Turning things around. Yep. Turning things around. Rory McIlroy, the champion of the PGA Tour. In that, you know, takes up for him quite a bit. All right. Yeah. See, am I wrong here?
Morikawa, this championing.
Yeah. This is for bogey, right? Oh, double bogey. Oh, wow. Holy smoke. Sorry, Colin.
They screwed up the graphic.
Right? That's not me.
It's either a bogey or they screwed up the graphic before. No, it's a double. They screwed up the graphic. They were saying it was a par 5.
Oh, dude, you're right. What is that? So one of the – you mentioned it. They have like a white-on-white background for these scores?
Yes, it's terrible. It's awful.
That's brutal. Is that for just because over par? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's when they're over par. Yes. So when you're seeing the name and then right next to it, like Rahm's on right now,
blue.
You get an even blue even par.
Yellow.
And like, what were they, red, I'm assuming, when they were under par?
Oh, I thought it was yellow, but
oh,
I could
okay.
be wrong.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Maybe you're right. And then it's white on white when they're over par.
You should be red. Do red or something. Like, that's absolutely abysmal.
I always wonder how they screw that up all the time, because you'll see it on – no network is safe from it. You see it on ESPN. You see it on Fox Sports.
Because
you'll get, like, MAC college football going, and it's like Ohio will be, like, silver on silver lettering or white on silver. You're like, what? How did we ever do this? How did we ever think this was a good idea?
How are multiple eyes watching this and being like, we're good.
Right, we're good. Yeah.
We're good here. But keep this going. Hopefully they change that. You got to.
I mean, there's been multiple times where I'm like, what number is that?
I mean, just right now, I was just like, is that 2 over? I can't really see that. All right. I feel like an old man complaining about this. Let's go. Get the colors right. Come on. Okay. So with that, a good day of baseball is on the horizon, because we do have some really impactful series that are going to get started, including, as Joe Sheehan pointed out, a massive one in the American League between Tampa Bay and Baltimore. We could start there really quickly because this is huge. Like, these two teams are now tied percentage-wise with one another at the top of the AL East. The Tampa Bay Rays have completely fallen off here in terms of their level of play. And right now, we have Glasnow slated to get the start for the Tampa Bay Rays. Glasnow has come out and pitched pretty well. And I think if you're making a case, look, it's a big price. And this is what kind of turns me off here. I was hoping when I saw that Glasnow was going to get the start, like, hey, cool, because Glasnow's got all the indicators, Kelly, of a dude that you want to bet on. 3.78 ERA on the surface is pretty average, but expected fielding independent of 2.83. He is striking out guys at a pretty, like a really high rate. He's back to what he was as a pitcher from a strikeout rate perspective throughout his career. The issue for him has been the command. His walks have been up, but he has all the indicators that I want to bet on. The problem is that you're looking at an opening price of $1.70, and the market was already all over. It betted up to $1.90 in some spots, so slept on it. It was already a little bit higher than I thought, because Baltimore is a good team, and Glasnow is a guy I want to support, but the market pumped that up to the point where I couldn't get in on there. And the other thing, too, is, well, I think that maybe we're a little too high for the price on the Glasnow. Gibson's not a guy I want to rush into back either, even with the Rays struggles. 4.77 ERA, 4.48 expected. Again, with him, like the home runs in terms of the issues that he had last year are pretty down. It's just given up a whole bunch of contact, and that's been a problem for him so far this season. The Rays have a lineup capable, even though they haven't been performing very well, of taking advantage of this. So I got priced out of this. I like Glasnow and the Rays, but I got priced out of it.
Well, that was, you know, talking about things that we kind of remember from the week. Mark Borchardt bringing up Glasnow of a longer shot Cy Young candidate earlier in the week, he thought, potential. Like, he was real high on Glasnow going forward.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting to watch, only because, like, initially right now, and I do wonder, like, this is why votes are always pretty fascinating, because I don't follow the awards market as much when it comes to Major League Baseball, and just the dynamic of how many of these, in a statistically dominant sport like this, where, you know, the numbers are everything pretty much, I would assume beat writers are more in tune with, like, advanced metrics and things like that. And would a guy who at this point right now, as I mentioned, is a 3.78 ERA, on its surface, you're like, that's not a number that wins a Cy Young. But there are indicators, like I said, an ex-FIP under three, that this guy, if he continues to pitch at his level, that that's going to find, right, water finds its level, mm-hmm. and he's going to pitch at an extremely high level. Like, that might be worth doing it, because narratively, being the front-end guy for a Rays team that's kind of scuffling, but leading them to wins each time out, and his numbers continuing to improve.
Right.
I could totally see it.
Yeah, yeah. It's got the runway, at least in front of him, that that could play out, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. Of all the things I've heard all week, I just remember Mark mentioning that name. I was like, whoa, that's a long shot. Okay.
And it's so, and I like this, too, because I should get more into Mark. It's only because, like, you know me. Like, I'm like, hey, man, numbers say this. Like, that it should right, play yeah. out over the course of a large sample size. And when you hear a lot of these guys talk, it's like the same thing, right? Hey, numbers say the Padres are going to be pretty good. 6.5 games back. Expect a stretch where they're going to start to perform. Like, there's just faith that a lot of the statistical returns that they see are going to start to show. And it's kind of the same thing with Glasnow. It's almost like a blind faith, because you're like, the numbers yeah. are there. It's just got to play out that way. And sometimes, it sounds crazy, but sometimes even 162 games, you can have a wide variety of variants. I mean, we've seen it all the time. Rangers teams from a few years back when they were winning one-run games like freaking crazy over the course of 162. Like,
yeah, I think the only thing that complicates it, right, it is the team future versus the player future, right? Where yeah. there's a human element to the voting, right? And that's, I mean, how many times over the past few years, just me and you talking NBA MVP, right? It's like, well, I don't know. We think it should be this guy because of the numbers, but the Embiid Jokic narrative has overtaken the entire voting process over the past 3 years. That, like, you have to keep that in the back of your mind at least.
Yep. Another big game. I want to go to National League really quickly, because speaking of awards, we have a battle of favorites for the NL Cy Young today. Arizona and Atlanta will battle it out later today. That's
early
going to
start,
be,
right?
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, that's like an hour and a half, so yeah. That's good. Spencer Strider and Zach Gallen going at it. We saw this overnight at about $1.90, 8.5 over -120. Totals pretty much the same. You can find nines if you want to bet that under. You can find 8.5 if you want to bet it over. $1.87 to $2 is the price here on the Braves. This is just the real question. And again, I very much would argue here, man. So last time we saw Zach Gallen, it was a road start against Toronto. Went out there, pitched five, but gave up three earned runs, gave up a long shot, only struck out five. The road scuffles continue for Gallen. And I kind of keep – I like Zach Gallen a lot, but I just keep looking at him, even now that he's not the favorite, Kelly, and keep thinking, like, how can you be plus 280 to win this award and have the struggles on the road that you are at this point right now? If you look at their home road splits again, an ERA that's over five for Gallen away from home, like 5.11 still as it sits right now, he's been great at home. But, like, that's got to hold you back at some point. And it's a pretty interesting scenario here, because it's not like you get any reprieve. You're going to face that Atlanta lineup. And if you've been scuffling on the road and that's actually something that's legitimate, I think this is a pretty interesting game, not only because of the narrative and these two teams and what they're fighting for in terms of spots in the postseason, but from a Cy Young standpoint, if Gallen goes out there and gets smoked, and then you got a guy like Snell starting later today or whatever it's going to be, like, this could be a day in which we see a good shift on Gallen for Cy Young award markets, and it could go either way. But if he goes out there and continues to struggle, I mean, I think you continue to see him drop.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Because I'm kind of beating myself up. I'm not really upset about it because I'm not a big baseball bettor, but I'm kind of beating myself up. I didn't bet Spencer Strider a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You were doing a great breakdown of these pitchers kind of over the past couple weeks, whenever we've talked. And, you know, it was probably, what, +400, something like that. I know you mentioned Blake Snell, that number moving big that you had kind of your eyes on before. But that NL Cy Young race,
yep.
I mean, is that – Is today, if you're interested in Spencer Strider, is today the day to get in? Like, if you're betting Braves today, are you betting that in the Cy Young market too?
I think it's an interesting way to attack a game like today. Like, if you think the Braves are a play today, why not throw something on Strider?
Add that to your portfolio.
Yeah, yeah, add it to your portfolio +210, because I don't think he's going anywhere in terms of the favorite role. And if you think the Braves are winning today, that would obviously more than likely include a good performance against Zach Gallen, right, who is the second choice right now. And I would also throw out there, and I want smarter people, you know, on Twitter at MeJVT or at Kelly Bidlin. I would love to hear this, because again, I'm coming from a place of, like, I watch baseball, but don't know enough to, I know the intricacies of voting. Like, I keep going back to, I talk to you. I'm looking at this right now. Last start, 6 innings pitched, gave up 3 hits, just 1 earned run, only struck out 3. On the season, he's got a 2.88 ERA, over 118 and 2/3 and 20 starts. Why is Marcus Stroman continuing to drift out to 20 to 1. And especially if he's going to be a guy that gets shipped off somewhere contention wise, whether it be like an Angels, as Joe Sheehan mentioned, because that's been a name that I've thrown out there for the Angels to maybe go get, won't be as expensive. Whether it's the Giants who've been rumored to go and get him. Like, Stroman's been great. What am I missing with Marcus Stroman that he just continues to float out there? Is it the team that he's on? You know, he had two rough starts, but still an ERA under three. Even his, like, xFIP is kind of tight. It's like a 371, so there's not, like, a ton of regression coming. I've been curious about what I'm missing with Stroman and just this market overall, so right? Why Gallen's been favored, why Stroman continues to drift when those two guys, I think, performance-wise, have been heading in opposite directions.
Right, makes sense. As of today, if you had to make one bet, is that the bet you'd make?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know what I'm missing with Stroman. Like, again, you've got the, I don't even have to remove the names. Just, like, give them the numbers. Like, so, I don't know. It's going to be pretty fascinating to see if that's going to happen for Stroman. If it's because of anything else that's happening. But he's, like, there's a lot of teams. The Yankees are rumored to be interested in him. So, that maybe that's it. Like, do you get shipped off to another league? And that's maybe going to kill you if that's the case.
Yeah.
But currently at 20 to 1, if he stays in the National League, I would think his profile gives him more of a shot.
That is tough. I mean, I guess if he's really on the block, right, you got to keep that
in mind. Yeah, it's not an Ohtani situation where if he gets shipped off the American League, he's winning the award still. You know what I mean?
Right,
which,
exactly.
By the way, I will take credit. We'll take a little bit of credit for that. We were on with, I think it was Sharp Bunny and Dustin and I, and we talked to, I think it was, not Heyman, one of the USA Today writer that I can't remember. Bob Nightingale, thank you. And like, I brought up, like, hey, this is like 2 months ago, a month ago. Like, you know, Ohtani could probably still win AL MVP if he gets shipped off. Maybe still the case. All right, we'll come back. We have plenty left to get to when we return. Paul Carr, True Media Sports Director of Content. And, of course, handicapping extraordinaire in the world of football. Talk to him about the Women's World Cup.
The Sports Betting Network.
There's a lot of stuff for use up on the website. One of the great things is, of course, the Picks at a Glance page. You can easily sort through picks. You can follow hosts and guests and their selections as well. And we have a top VSiN experts leaderboard. You can check out the hot hand at the network. Introductory offer for everything we do at $19 over at VSiN.com/subscribe. Check that out. Or make sure you check out, of course, our summer kickoff special, $175, everything we do through the Super Bowl. With that, let's talk a little bit of football. Real football. Women's World Cup, of course, underway. We had a pretty big upset earlier in the day, so let's go over that and some news when it comes to injuries and more. Paul Carr is with us to give us some time to preview the Women's World Cup. Paul, it's good to talk to you. I wanted to start with, first off, how shocked were you at the upset of the day a little bit earlier where New Zealand were able to pull that off as a pretty big underdog?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you get your first World Cup win, and this is not New Zealand's first tournament, this is their sixth tournament, and they had not won in 15 games, that's a pretty huge deal. I mean, they're at home. Home team always gets a little bit of a bump at a World Cup, but still, this is a Norway team that I think some people thought might be a bit of a sleeper, and it's a great win for New Zealand. So yeah, big surprise out of the gate. It's a great way to start the tournament.
Yeah, and I was double-checking before. Maybe you'll know this off the top of my head. But when looking at some of the group odds, too, Norway was about a $3 favorite to win that thing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So at least right now, and that was before the game, and New Zealand was 5-1 before that win. All right, the other bit of news, of course, Sam Kerr. So she's going to miss Australia's first two games. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of those already played. They got a 1-0 win over Ireland. This, of course, affects the Golden Boot because she was about 750 or so to win the award behind Alex Morgan, behind Sophia Smith. So walk us through the changes here on this board, because Kelly and I were talking about this earlier. It's a two-part question. It doesn't seem like much has changed at the top despite the fact that Kerr is going to be out. And the second part, is there actually a shot that they should see that maybe somebody could come back in and buy it like 25-1, even though she's missing two games?
I'll start with the second one. I don't think so for Kerr. I mean, because one of the things you need if you win the Golden Boot is you almost always need to pile up some goals in the group stage, because that's when you're playing easier opponents. And so she's losing a couple cracks at that. So I don't think there's any real value in her at 25-1. As far as the others, you know, you get such a short price on Morgan and Smith that I just don't think they can get a whole lot shorter. And it's going to depend a lot on this first game against Vietnam, where you'd expect one or both of them to maybe pile up some goals. So I don't think it changes the whole picture too much. The one I like, and this depends a ton on your price, I think you have Alexandra Popp of Germany at +900 here, where I've seen her this morning. I've also seen her as high as +1600 places this morning still. So if you can get her closer to that, I do like Pop. I mean, she plays for Germany. They have a relatively weak group. I think she takes penalties, although that's a little fuzzy. And she scored every game for them at Euros last year that she played. So I think that's my play. That's the one I do have a play on, if you can get that price closer to plus 1600.
And speaking of Germany, right now, as we still have these futures up, that is still a play worth making for you, right? Germany to win the tournament?
I mean, it always is for me. Yep. But yeah, if you can get them at that, I'd say at least plus 700, then I think it's worth it. They do have some injuries. Lena Oberdorf, one of their best players and midfielder, is maybe a little dinged up. But like I said, they have a relatively easy group in Morocco, Colombia, South Korea. So they should still kind of cruise through the group stage and have some time to play their way into form and get healthy before they get into the knockout stage. They made the final of Euros last year and took England extra time. So this is not like a long shot. This is the fourth betting favorite on the whole. But if you can get that plus 700 price or better, I do like Germany.
All right, and the others, I was going through over the last couple of days everything that's offered at all these shops. My eyes are going cross because there's so much that you can wager and wade into. Let's talk about some group wagers first. Walk us through Denmark and why you would look at them at 850 to win their group.
Yeah, so Denmark is the second favorite in the group. England is the second favorite in the tournament and obviously the favorite to win the group. So if I want to talk down England, it's that, look, they started the same 11 players in all six games of Euros last year, which they won. Four of those players are not here. Three are hurt, one retired. Another, Millie Bright, is on the team, but a little sketchy health-wise right now. So England not at full strength. Denmark has a lot of players from a lot of leagues across the world, the top leagues. Pernille Harder is the name to watch. She's their forward, one of the 10, 15 best players at the tournament or first World Cup. This is plus 850, so it's obviously a flyer. But if they can beat England, both teams should handle Haiti and China. So it kind of, we think, will come down to that England-Denmark game, which will be the second game of the group stage for them. So yeah, plus 850, I think, is a decent price. Long shot for Denmark to win the group.
All right, another two-part question, because you do have Nigeria, double chance, plus 260 versus Canada. That game is going to be later tonight, 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. That does tie into Canada to lose in group stage at plus 230. But walk me through what a double chance wager is as somebody who doesn't really do a lot of this in terms of football. I was looking at that yesterday. I was like, huh, that's a pretty interesting market.
Yeah, different books will call it different things. Double chance is kind of a fancy way of saying plus half a goal.
Yeah.
So, sometimes the prices vary, which I never quite understood, but it's the same bet. Double chance means you get two different shots. You get Nigeria to win, you get Nigeria to draw.
Okay.
So I do like the Nigeria double chance against Canada in this game tonight.
Okay. And that ties into Canada to lose in group stage. Would assume that means just lose a game in group stage?
To go out in the group
okay.
stage.
Okay.
So to not advance. Both these bets are fading Canada.
Yeah.
They're an older team. Christine Sinclair is the name that people might know. She's scored more international goals than anybody ever, male or female. But she's 40, so she's not the goal scoring threat she was. They have injury issues. Janine Becky is out for them. Some questions on the back line. Not a very potent team from an offensive standpoint. And that obviously makes you more vulnerable to upsets. So I don't think they get out of the group. I think Ireland or Nigeria could. Ireland is the one way I would go, even though they lost to Australia today. So yeah, Canada not to get out of the group or to go out in the group stage at plus 230, I like. And I like Nigeria on the double chance, getting a really nice plus 260. Nigeria is one of those, high ceiling, low floor type of teams. They've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of issues behind the scenes fighting with the Federation. But when they're good, they're really good. And I think they can give Canada a run for their money tonight.
All right, let's shift over to tomorrow really quick. I want to get your best bets out before I ask you some other general questions about what we're looking at. Tomorrow, 10 p.m. Pacific time for us on the West Coast, the Philippines and Switzerland, and you've got to play there.
Well, these are tough games to handicap because this is kind of like a 1 versus a 16 seed in NCAA tournament when there's this giant spread. I mean, the U.S., I think, is laying six and a half
right,
goals, which just sounds stupid. But this is coming because they beat Thailand 13-0 in the opener last time, 4 years ago at the World Cup. And remember, goal difference matters. It's your first tiebreaker. So if the U.S. wins this by a lot, it makes it easier. A draw against Netherlands in the second game isn't the end of the world because you probably still have a tiebreaker edge. So this is more of a lean than a play. I would still lean toward the U.S. just because, you don't want to bet against them. The market I was looking for and couldn't find anywhere available for me, at least, was more goals total in the second half. Because that's when the U.S. just wears teams down with their depth, with their fitness. 10 of those 13 goals against Thailand were in the second half 4 years ago. So that's what I would look for if you can get any kind of decent price on that. But yeah, if I have to pick a side here, I would still go toward the U.S. even laying a giant number.
If so, in doing reading and research, it would seem that the narrative would be that this is a still a very good U.S. women's team, but that maybe the gap has shrunk in between them and the rest of them. Is that accurately priced in the market overall, or are there ways to play against that?
I think it's pretty accurately priced. Okay. You look at 4 years ago, the U.S. was like plus 150, maybe plus 200 to win the whole thing. And now they're in the plus 250 range, and England's not too far behind that. Plus 250 is not bad. I think, you know, if you're a fan of the U.S., you want to root for them. I don't think that's a terrible price to lay a little bit of money on to have fun rooting interest for the tournament. But yeah, the gap just every tournament gets a little bit closer. U.S. won three of their four knockout games by one goal last time around. So, but U.S. is still the best team. They're just the margin's not quite what it used to be.
All right, and the last one I have for you overall, we'll get you out of here on this. You know, we talked a lot about top goal scorer. How do you handicap a Golden Glove, if at all? Because obviously, I was thinking about this. I'm like, man, that seems like a really hard thing to kind of handicap, because you essentially want shots on goal, right? But then if you're giving up a bunch, then that kind of means that you're probably a team that's not playing well. How do you do that?
I don't think there's a great way to do it. Generally, you would just go like kind of who has the best defense and a decent keeper. But you never know. I don't think there's a really great way. So much is circumstantial, the nature of the game. I think the Dutch keeper won 4 years ago, even though, you know, Christina Endler from Chile was probably the best keeper, but they just didn't go very far. So I don't think there's a great way. And this is kind of a market. Again, this is not a black and white market like the Golden Boot, where it's number of goals you scored. This is voted on by a technical committee. So yeah, something that's super subjective like that and can change so much, you know, with one game, one save. You save one penalty and suddenly you're the favorite. I tend to stay away from those.
All right, so I'll get my last question, it's a viewing question. I was asking Kelly, Open Championship's underway, if he stays up all night and watches these things, what are the viewing habits for you during the Women's World Cup? Are you staying up? You power it through? What's the plan?
This is tough. So it's nice because the first two U.S. games are primetime. I think it's 8 Central where I am. The third one won't be. Ideally, that game doesn't matter too much. But then I'm going to have to start making hard choices. I think the first U.S. game, if they win the group, is in primetime as well. And then it gets really tough. So through one day, I'm in wake up and put on the replay and catch up mode, or catch the end of a game if it's still going when I wake up. As we get deeper in the tournament and really the knockout stage, that's where I'm probably going to have to, I don't know. I keep going back and forth. Do I stay up to like 3 to watch, or do I wake up at 5? There's no good answer here.
Paul, it's good to talk to you, man. Thank you very much for the time. Awesome stuff.
You bet, JVT.
At Paul Carr up on Twitter. You want to give him a follow there. It's always the best question with these kind of things. I'll have to ask the question when the FIBA World Cup starts in the Philippines for basketball.
Totally.
You gotta wonder what the schedule is going to be like.
I'm with Paul, too. I'm playing it all by ear. We'll see.
I'm down to ignore my family. I think that's fine.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive too fast, you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. Jonathan Von Tobel here on A Numbers Game, last 30 minutes. I'm filling in for Gil Alexander today. Really quickly, before we get back to baseball, any good golf observations that you would like to make? Justin Rose right now with a putt for, is it par? He's at 2 over right now. I know that.
Par. It's hard to see, but he is 2 over. Yeah, par on a par 5. Needs to make this. And tracking. Oh, and lips out.
Oh, man, that's tough.
Let's see. Tough. Your leaderboard update. Brought to you by Sean McCollum. Let's see. We have Antoine Roser did finish with a birdie. So he got to 4 under par behind Lamprecht, Fleetwood.
Okay.
And then it's Stewart Cink, Wyndham Clark in the clubhouse at 3 under. Brian Harman's, I'm on Brian Harman watch because he's 3 under through 9.
Do you have nothing on him?
I've got nothing on him.
You let out a Brian Harman get out of my life.
Well, he's been playing good the past few weeks, and it's kind of a little bit out of nowhere. We're not exactly talking about – I mean, the things I talked about when breaking down and previewing this tournament, Brian Harman doesn't fit a lot of the categories. He's not very long off the tee. Yes, he's accurate. That helps, but he doesn't have a lot of length in his game, so I'm pretty impressed with what he's doing right now. You've got him at 3 under. He's still on the course. Let's see. Matthew Jordan, Jordan Spieth, Siwoo Kim, all in the clubhouse at 2 under. And then you have Joaquin Niemann at 2 under through 6. I do have an outright on him, so hopefully he keeps going. Just not too fast, JVT. You know, I don't want to do the Joaquin Niemann steal my first-round leader money when I don't have a first-round leader bet on him. That wouldn't be good. And he is, 2 under par. There is also Adrian Otugwe. 2 under par. Sorry, Adrian. I'm sure I butchered your name there. He's through 14 at 2 under. Then you got a bunch of guys 1 under par. As far as live odds, Tommy Fleetwood at the top of the board right now, plus 650. JVT, pro golf handicapper. Scotty Scheffler, 7-1. Rory McIlroy, plus 750. John Rahm, 14-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 18. Spieth, 18. Wyndham Clark, 18. And then we just had a big shift. Xander Schauffele, 22. Cantlay, 22. Hovland, 28. Brian Harman, 30-1. Live, if you wanted to get in on that. Live, first-round leader odds. Fleetwood and Lamprecht, both plus 140. Harman, 14-1. Niemann, 18-1. Hatton, 25-1. And then it drops down to 45.
An observation here. The wind seems to be picking up a little bit. At least I'm observing more moving parts on these guys, like the gloves hanging out of the back pocket, moving around while they're trying to get while they're trying to line up their shots. It does seem more windy. And I will say, as watching some of these guys early, you know, some of the dudes who are in the early parts of their round right now, mm-hmm. so obviously part of the late window, not some great scores early on for some of these guys, right? Like a lot of dudes, they're at least five to seven to nine holes in some indications. They're all just at even. There's quite a few guys that are a little bit later in their rounds that are about one over or so. It does seem that maybe the course is playing a little bit harder here in this late window. Is that a safe observation?
Yeah, there's a chance. I don't really know why it would. I guess there's a chance maybe the sun is baking out these greens a little bit. Maybe they're a little faster than what these guys were practicing on, just because it's been bright and sunny basically the entire day over there. Really no rain at all. The wind, though, it's kind of what we expected, JVT. I mean, we get 5 mile an hour prevailing winds, westerly prevailing winds. Thank you for whoever tweeted that in yesterday. I forgot who it was already. I think Scotty. Prevailing winds, 5 mile an hour. So you're only talking about the winds right now are like 10 miles an hour out of the northwest, 10 to 12 mile an hour out of the northwest. That really wouldn't be – that's not an abnormally high number for a PGA Tour event, for an Open Championship event. It's definitely not a big number, but – just keep in mind how flat this course is. It's right up against the ocean, so you're going to feel every bit of that 12 miles an hour where you might be playing. We might see 12 miles an hour at a course in the States where there might be a billion houses and it might be in the middle of a city or something, right? Where buildings are going to help block that wind and stuff. But so they're feeling every bit of the wind right now, but it's not a lot going on right there.
Right, and like to your point too about like these things getting baked out. You know, I was watching like Scheffler. I mean, it seemed like he was getting some pretty good run on some of those tee shots in the fair. Like there was a couple that he added like a good like 10 yards on it. So it's not like I don't think there would be a massive difference. I mean, you see right now, I don't know who this is, Legoska,
Ramon Langeske.
But you see the way the wind's whipping him around a little bit in terms of the outfit. So maybe it has picked up a little bit because, like, again, we're watching on TV, but I'm just observing more in terms of wind, which I was not seeing this morning when these guys were playing. So. Maybe just picking up and throwing some guys off, but it's been pretty surprising to watch.
I hope you're right, and I hope it does. I hope it gets way worse. Because that's the point, right?
Yeah,
the first round just end right now.
If you've got a Lamprecht first round leader,
I might be saying his name wrong for 2 hours. I haven't heard it.
There is some nut who's got a first round leader on him, right?
Probably. And before everybody asked me what the odds were on him, I have no idea, but probably 200-ish to 1. The one thing to keep in mind, whatever his first round leader odds, they're way shorter than whatever his outright odds were, because there's a chance, right? There's always a chance you could put one fluky round together and go low. So that's where you always see, like, you know, the Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, their first round leader odds are longer than what their full tournament odds are, because you expect the top talent guys over 4 days to be able to put it all together.
Sample size, baby. Yep. Sample size theater. But small sample size theater will give you some wild results. All right, Rory.
Rory's had a wild round so far. Through five, he's even par.
Oh, so he dropped one because he was 1 under, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was also 1 over at one point, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, he's been all over the place for the most part. Set himself up right here. That's a par three.
He went birdie on 2, bogey on 4, parred the par 5 fifth.
Okay. All right. Makes sense then. Makes sense. All right. We'll see if he's got something. He's got about like a 20-foot-ish putt for birdie right now on this par three. Again, Lamprecht and Fleetwood at 5-under, your leaders at this point right now. And as you noted, the bad juju will follow me. I have an outright on Tommy Fleetwood, but nothing on the first round. So hopefully my guy. If I get my two guys, Kelly, my FOMO guys, I got a Masters ticket on Mats when he won it, 50-1. If I can get my boy Fleetwood, I'm running out of guys. If my guy Fleetwood could pull this off, who's going to be my next dude?
I don't know, man. Yeah, you've been all over Fleetwood, man. Got to give you credit.
Nothing's going to happen. And it's not like I had some foresight. It was just like, hey, I bet Fleetwood a lot. And I just don't want to be, you know what I mean? It was one of those where it's just like, I always say it, go back to the Shinnecock U.S. Open. And I had him there, and he loses it out by a stroke and nearly set a course record. And since then, he's been like, now he is the white whale.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've been betting him a lot this year, yeah, too, especially over the past few months because he's been playing so well. But, man, I had to cut out the outrights on him because it's just, he cannot win over in the U.S.
And here's the thing, and as you know this, you watch more than I do, and being a casual fan of his, my worry is he has rounds in him like this all the time.
Yeah.
Like a 5-under round where he comes out and his guns are blazing. Now, usually happens on like Saturday. And then Sunday just kind of falls off and you don't really hear from him. So the fact that this happened early, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that he got the good round out already. Because generally that's what you get from Fleetwood. You get two like par rounds, like just you're floating around.
Yeah, there's a 73 or 74 waiting for him tomorrow or Saturday. Exactly. I'm with you, yes.
Exactly. That's generally what you see from Tommy. all right, really quick, a couple more baseball games to get to because we do have some fascinating contests that's going to be later. I wanted to move to San Francisco and see Cincinnati if we could. You know, we mentioned this with Sheehan, the fact that Cincinnati has fallen on some hard times. They lose that series to Milwaukee before the break. They lose coming out of the break to the Milwaukee Brewers, so they have fallen out by about 2.5 games in the NL Central. But of course, big matchups here, big series here as you're playing the San Francisco Giants and looking to make some headway in the wild card race. We have seen, I saw it overnight here on the screen, of minus 125 in favor of Cobb in San Francisco. This is now, as you see here, essentially a pick, minus 108. Reds in other spots are as high as minus 115, Kelly. So a big market swing in favor of Abbott and the Cincinnati Reds, and haven't seen a pitching change, so I don't think that's it. What's interesting as well here is, again, as somebody who handicaps it this way, and if this price continues to climb on the Giants, I'll be in on San Francisco and Cobb today only because Abbott does have the indicators of a guy that, hey, look, man, maybe getting a little lucky. Through 8 starts, 47 and 2/3, 2.45 ERA, but a 3.62 expected ERA and a 4.59 expected fielding independent. Those are all the indicators for somebody like me that is looking to potentially play against some overvalued guys, and it might be that Abbott is being played by the market. But and that's the thing, because generally what I'll see, Kelly, is you'll see the market move in like those differentials that I'm looking at for the most part. Not the case here. So I feel like maybe I'm missing something with Abbott, but the numbers would tell me that Abbott potentially could be an overvalued dude. But maybe the market is pretty high on the Cincinnati Reds team overall. They were kind of a darling for the most part, but I think they kind of showed their true colors in that series in Milwaukee. Cobb, on the other hand, if you look at the way that he's been pitching this year, 2.82 ERA, 3.27 expected. So he has actually been exactly what you kind of expect here and been pitching extremely well. Last two starts, actually we'll go to last four, two earned runs or fewer in each of them, has gone pretty deep in the last two for him, six innings. Cobb's been in pretty good form, and the fact that if we're going to get plus, if you're going to give me more than even money on the Giants, if we're going to get to like plus 110, which it looks like we're getting to, Giants will be a play on the card later tonight for me against the Cincinnati Reds. So we'll see if that's going to be the case, but was pretty surprised to see this market move.
That's another early start. We start in 45 minutes. I like it.
All right, yep, we're going to do it. Let's track some stuff here. Come on, we got to get some stuff in. All right, we'll take our break. We wrap it up. We got our last 10 minutes. We got plenty left to get to before we head out. Make sure if you missed out on anything with Paul Carr, awesome conversation. Check that out at VSiN.com as we look to head to the Women's World Cup, which got started today. So VSiN.com for that and everything we have to offer. Check out that summer kickoff special. Man, it's the last chance. I'm telling you, it's the last chance you get.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager with BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits, like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. And if you're planning a trip out to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points. They can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Visit BetMGM.com for terms. You've got to be 21. New and existing customer offer. Promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Yeah, Kelly freaked me out because as I was talking to him in the break, he kept looking past me and making a face, and I was like, who's behind me? What's happening?
It's the sportsbooks TVs. Yeah. I always tell Gil it's me looking through his soul.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll be like, why are you looking at me so intently? I'm like, no, I'm trying to see the TVs that are 20 feet behind you.
Yeah. Do I steal Gil's line?
What's that?
We get tweets.
There you go.
I was asking for tweets from smart people about evaluating the NL Cy Young market. Mm-hmm. And what am I missing on Marcus Stroman that he'd be 20-1? And not only just 20-1, but continues to get like the odds get worse for him to win it. I just don't really understand. One of our loyal guys, Buddhist Man, tweets in, says, I was going to tweet you, but after you said you wanted to hear from smart people, I reconsidered.
Buddhist Man, creator of Hardwood Handicappers with JVT, presented by Kelly Bidlin.
Yes, semicolon, a Taco Bell production. We're trying to get some sponsorship.
Yeah, we're actually, for Buddhist Man out there, we're kind of using some of your initial input on a redesign for that graphic.
Yeah, I haven't gone with you to implement that, but yes, we are going to talk about that. What was I going to say? Oh, never mind. I was going to make a joke about sponsorship deals and whatnot, but they were going to be inappropriate. sometimes it happens.
Call.
Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble. Never mind. All right, with that, we'll keep an eye on the British. Nothing really to update here. Rory's on 7, and that's pretty much it. So we were talking about, you brought this up, but this is a pretty fascinating market. Again, there's so many things to bet into if you want when it comes to the NFL, pretty much all of these things. You know, I mentioned if you go on like DraftKings website, and you look at just the Women's World Cup and the offerings there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you would sort through all of it at one time to find, like, dig up something. So there are people out there that do. So one of the markets that is up now over at DraftKings is most improved regular season record. So obviously most improved from a season ago. So for example, if we're looking at it, the Chicago Bears at +210 are the favorite here in this market. The Chicago Bears last year finishing with the worst record. They only had 3 wins. And are a team that has a win total of 7.5 that many believe could make a big push after a somewhat successful offseason. So they are there at +210. The second choice, one that I would more gravitate toward, the Denver Broncos, who were 5-12 last year, I think can be a playoff team this coming season if Sean Payton can kind of get things right there. So there's a lot of different options. Kelly, I will ask you, because here's another way to attack this, which this is not something I have done yet. Right, because I can't really find the market for it. But I'll bring this up to you. I have brought up the fact that the Jacksonville Jaguars could be a candidate because of their schedule to finish with the 1 seed in the AFC. Again, not power rated as the best team in the AFC, but somebody that could take advantage of an opportunistic schedule and post a record that is better than what they are as a collective. They were 9-8 last year.
Right.
If they do that, right, if they're going to win that, they would also be a candidate for most improved regular season record, because you would think it would take about 13 games to win that 1 seed. They were 9-8, so that would be an improvement of 4 wins. That would put you right in the realm of Chicago, right? I mean, Chicago Bears, for example. If you go from 3 to like 7 wins or 8 wins, right around the win total, that's 4-5 wins. So like Jacksonville, so instead of what I'm saying here is, instead of betting into a market of will the Jaguars win the 1 seed in the AFC and probably getting in the range of about 14-1 or so, why not most improved regular season record at 22-1? That would somewhat correlate with that coming to fruition.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Either maybe not a complete bet instead, but I would put more money here. Mm. So I think the first, when you're evaluating this market, this is a new market I've never seen posted before. But when you're evaluating this from an NFL side, what do you think is the number of wins a team needs to improve by to actually win this market?
I mean, I think we can guess that it's 4-5.
Okay, that's what I think. When I was first looking at this last night, I was thinking five, right? Yeah. Like I think you got to look for a team that I think you can go five over what they did a year ago.
And by the way, I'm using the Bears as my barometer because what are the Bears win total? 8.5, like right? 7.5.
Yeah, I think it's 7.5, 8.5.
If they're the
they go from 3 to 8.
Correct. Yeah. So they won 3 games last year. Their win total is around 8.5. Thus, that's the difference of about 5 games. They're the favorite to win the market. That's where my number comes.
And I actually think the Bears and the Jags are the easiest to think about that with, right? Because if you expect the Bears to make a big jump, like I think we all do. That's why they're the short shot in this market. Yeah, you're getting to 8 wins there. For the Jags, it's got to be 14, right? So you're talking about putting yourself right in that position to be the one seed in the AFC. When you brought this up, that was the first team that I kind of thought of because I have Jags division bets already and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you go from 9 to 14, like, yeah, that puts you right in that situation. So I think it would be them. This is a really interesting market, though, to me, because I think there's a lot of teams you could look at. Like, if you're betting anything Browns or Jets this year, right? You should be playing this market too.
So I brought this up to Pritch when we talked to him. Was that yesterday? Man, all these days they melt
yeah,
together.
It was yesterday. Yeah.
For me, the team that there's a lot of teams that I think are projected to be near the bottom of their division that I think the market is sleeping on. And I've talked about a couple of them, right? I've talked about the Patriots. I've talked about the Green Bay Packers. And the Browns, to me, are one that I think they have the key word is potential.
Yeah, me too.
If Deshaun Watson is close to being Deshaun Watson of 2020. And by the way, I did bet Myles Garrett to win Defensive Player of the Year at 8-1.
Okay.
Like I think that there is a real realm here for the Cleveland Browns to be much better. And if we go back again, if we're under the assumption that most improved would get you 4 or 5 wins, that would put you at about 11 wins this season for the Cleveland Browns. They won 7 last year. So 11 to 12 wins. Again, it's a very successful season. But when you're looking at it from the perspective of what Cleveland can be, Kelly, like I don't think it's out of this world if you're getting good quarterback play from the Cleveland Browns, that this is going to be a team that might be a lot better than most would indicate. Like I don't think you can take a lot from Deshaun Watson's play last year. That scenario
totally,
in terms of coming back after a long layoff, late season, bad weather, contact, all that kind of stuff. The potential is there for this team. If we're looking around at the end of the year, much like I brought up with Jacksonville and being like, oh, they got a pretty good record. I don't know if they're that good, but they got a pretty good record. It's the same thing here with Cleveland, where when you get through like that game against Week 9 for the Cardinals, and you're looking at a Cleveland team that might only have like 2 losses on their card, I don't think it would be out of this world to see Cleveland as one of those teams that can win the AFC North, win about 11 or 12 games, and all of a sudden you're in contention for most improved.
Yeah, the way I would put it with that, I think that division is going to be absolutely brutal. Like, I think that I'm very high on the Bengals. My opinion on the Bengals really hasn't changed much in the past year and a half, right? But I think people are still, I'm in the camp of, I think people are sleeping on the Ravens a bit this year. I think, watch out. I think this is one of the better surrounding casts that Lamar Jackson's ever had. You're going to get Lamar Jackson coming back. Some guy that's had a lot of rest coming off a turbulent offseason. I'm expecting him to play angry, play well, play big to come out of the gates. And then exactly what you said about the Browns, I would totally expect for them to improve. And then we saw what the Steelers did last year. And I don't know if you know this, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. If that keeps going, this division's going to be absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
But I think there are teams like the Browns that, like, there's not as big a separation between all 4 of those teams as I think people want to believe, especially the top 3, Cleveland, Baltimore, and Cincinnati.
And I'll throw out something else, too. Like, so I know our buddy Will Hill is really high on the New York Jets this year.
Yep.
If you're somebody like Will who believes that this Jets thing is going to work perfectly.
I'm not, but if you are,
totally. 11-1 for most improved. They won 7 games last year. If you think they can win the division, if you think they're going to be every bit as good as they potentially can be with that defense, and if you're getting vintage Aaron Rodgers to come back and win 12 games, that would put you at 5 wins over what you were last year. That you're, again, what you're shooting for, I think we're right, is shooting for that 5-win improvement mark.
Yeah.
And if you think that this Jets team can be a 1 seed and be as good as maybe on paper some believe them to be, I don't know why you wouldn't look at 11-1 for the most improved record.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there's some value in this market though, because we're talking about double digit.
Is there a least improvement or whatever?
No.
Yeah, I mean that's a good market to look at too.
Yeah, if we could go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would be the worst from a year ago?
Yeah. I don't know. How do you phrase that? Most improved, least improved? I don't know. I got all these ideas, man. I got all these ideas.
Who would that be for you? The Vikings? Vikings would be the short shot.
No, don't disrespect my guys. Don't disrespect
my guys.
They're
my guys on this show. You better watch out.
Okay. I'm a big Kirk Cousins guy. I've been watching quarterback, you know? Him and his son, Coop. This is what you do after a long day, Coop. You build a fire out back.
They would definitely be the short shot in that market, though. They're 13-4.
Everyone would talk
about the
one
score games. Yeah, they would be the favorite of that market.
I mean, look at their win total this year, right? That's about what I'm bad at math, about a 4.5 win difference.
Yep.
Huh. Time flies by when you're having fun. What a day, huh? What a day. I was going to say, keep it going, Tommy Fleetwood, but you can't because you're in the clubhouse. All right, we'll be back. Tomorrow is Friday, so we'll have a fun show on tap for you then as you wrap up the week. Stick around. Lombardi Line coming at you next year on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.